children, listen. Let me tell you a story about a village that is built with his glory. No sorrow in this place. Just lift your voice and say, everybody, let's celebrate. Look like it's gonna be a lovely day. Come on, everybody, let's celebrate. Forget the worries, throw your problems away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Village Celebration Radio Show. I'm Vicki Newton. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a very exciting show, healthcare and the expensive costs of prescription drugs. What if you or your loved ones could pay just a fraction of the cost? I'm talking just a little bit of what you've paid in the past. Sounds too good to be true? Well, it's not. Stay with us. We will tell you how and where. But we begin with what really is the beginning for most everybody, the family. To be exact, the Black family, so often discussed, maligned, and even misunderstood, perhaps. We are joined by sociologist Veronica Newton. Veronica, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I need to say off the very top, you are smart and going to give us some really great insights. But for the record, we'd love to have you on my Newton branch of the family tree, but we are not related.
Yes, and what a coincidence.
I know. I'm still struck by that, and I'm sure if we do enough research, we will find some connection there in the family. You know, everybody has a family. The Black family has been the center of a lot of national conversations and policy efforts by some. Can you tell us exactly when the Black family became such a focal point for politicians and in many instances, a pinata, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I would have to say that the image of the Black family being considered dysfunctional really started with the Moynihan Report, which came out in 1965. And really, that report was from a sociologist. Moynihan himself was a sociologist, but he wasn't really taking a very critical lens when he did his analysis on the Black family, right? Mm-hmm. The Black family was portrayed in that report as being dysfunctional, high unemployment rate. He talked a lot about broken families and broken mm-hmm. homes, which is just a problematic term to begin with because, you know, there's multiple ways to have a family structure. Family structures come in different numbers and different, you know, gender roles and all the above, and so he really kind of hammered down this image of the dysfunctional Black family and really blamed a lot of it on the Black mothers because Black mothers were heads of households. And he really said that this is the Black family as the single-headed household from Black women is the downfall of all problems happening within the Black communities. And so that really puts a lot of pressure and paints Black mothers and Black women in a negative light.
Indeed.
And so since then, that report was so pervasive and so endemic that narrative of a dysfunctional Black family is still present today.
And so it really can be traced to 1965, which is interesting because in 65, according to the 1960 census, 77% of Black families were two-parent families. So he seems to have certainly missed the mark in 1965. With that report.
Yes, it's safe to say that he missed a lot with that report. He really did not take into consideration structural and systemic issues mm-hmm. when looking at his report. He only used certain data. He claimed he used census data, but obviously not everyone takes the census, and so mm-hmm. You would have to be critical of all the sources, right, that were used to mm-hmm. run these analyses, which he looked at in terms of children who were in homes were born without fathers, or education level for Black children, jobs. He really didn't look wholeheartedly, right, at the whole picture, I should say. when he looked at the black family. Because if you look at the statistics of white families during that time period, there was comparable numbers. Mm-hmm. See, it only appears as though that blacks were having family troubles, let's just say, mm-hmm. during that time period. Mm-hmm. But really, if we look at whites and Latinos, the statistics of their divorce rate and the statistics mm-hmm. of single-headed households, we're on a similar trend, right? Mm-hmm. African Americans may have been slightly higher for those rates of single-headed households, but white families and Latino families were also dealing with that same problem, same issues.
So it wasn't an even-handed treatment of the families in America. And I'm going to say that, not that I'm surprised by that. How legitimate is the contention that the black family has had so many obstacles dating all the way back to the plantation, when African Americans were not, slaves were not allowed to marry, and when there were relationships and unions and children born to those unions, often they were sold. So let's go back to the beginning, to the roots of our family in pre-colonial America.
Yes, yes. It's really important also when we were looking at the Moynihan Report that he was looking at black families through a westernized, white-centric lens, meaning he was only comparing black families to the nuclear family or the traditional family as we know it. And it's called the nuclear family. It's often not called the white-centric or European mm-hmm. or Western family structure. Mm-hmm. And so he's comparing blacks to whites, right? Comparing black culture to white culture and saying, well, there's just not something right about black culture and black families and black people, without looking at the fact that he's comparing two different types of cultures, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is really important for us to go back and look at how African families were. What was their family structure like in pre-colonial Africa? Mm-hmm. Way before European invasion, way before blacks were, brought over as chattel slavery to the United States. African families looked completely different than how we see black families and just family structures now. Black families weren't organized around the conjugal relationships, meaning they weren't organized around the husband and wife or two-parent household.
I see.
They were organized around a consanguineal household, which means that a lot of the times the core, the center of the family mm-hmm. was run by the brothers and sisters. And so if you had all brothers, the brothers would have a compound, and all the sisters would have a compound, and those were the core of the family.
Very interesting.
And so even when brothers and sisters did get married, oftentimes the husband or wife moved in to the same gendered compound or same-sex compound of the brothers and sisters. So the family structure was completely different in pre-colonial Africa.
So what an adjustment it had to have been for the Africans who were brought to America and enslaved, in terms of the family structure alone.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, exactly. And so when you really think about the culture and the missing culture and cultures that have been forgotten or we had to leave behind, and we were forced assimilation into these white-centric, Western style of family. And so one thing that we can say that we still are holding on to even today is a collective family organization. So blacks oftentimes are very close to extended family members.
Is that
right?
Why we have so many cousins? You know, many times we are calling people
cousins,
and we all we share are bonds.
Yes.
We don't share blood, but we consider each other family.
Yes, yes, exactly. And
okay.
That can be traced directly back to mm-hmm. the consanguineal family cores back in pre-colonial Africa. And mm-hmm. so during enslavement, you had enslaved black men and women having to assimilate, having to adjust, create new friends, create new family members, create new kinship bonds, mm-hmm. and also create new gender roles. Because remember, gender roles and the way that we know them today did not exist in pre-colonial Africa. They mm-hmm. existed in Western Europe, mm-hmm. With the man being the breadwinner and the woman working inside the house. So that was something forced upon Africans
sure.
Who were enslaved during that time, during enslavement, to adapt to that. And so it was really creating whole new culture and trying to fit into a culture that was not designed for black families. And so now we still see blacks adapting, adjusting, and assimilating to white-centric views on what is a family, mm-hmm. or what is considered a family in the United States.
And to your point, the most visible family in America, black or white, lives in the White House, and they are African-American. How has the Obama family, that nuclear family, helped redefine our narrative?
Yes, that's an excellent question. I really do think that the Obamas have kind of taken the dysfunctional black family from the Moynihan Report and really turned mm-hmm. it on its head, right? Mm-hmm. We have two, you know, President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama are two very high, they're very highly educated, mm-hmm. right? And not only are they highly educated, they attended Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. And so their class and social status background really elevate them and make them very visible as to who can be successful, who
Absolutely.
Is considered successful, and what jobs and status parents should have, right? That's mm-hmm. that is a very American value. And so with having them being so visible over the past, 8 or 9 years mm-hmm. At the White House, being the first black family, they really have dispelled that myth of the dysfunctional black family, because a lot of times you hear the rhetoric of President Obama not reaching out to the Republicans mm-hmm. to try to make bipartisan decisions. And a lot of people say that he spends a lot of time with his daughters. That's what he does during his free time. And so that just itself dispels the myth of the absentee black father.
Absolutely.
Right?
Flies in the face of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And his comments.
Right. And so they're really challenging that image. And they've really brought a positive image to the black family.
There are those, of course, who will say they are outliers, that they're the exception to the dysfunctional black family. But there are, as we know, many black families who are successful in terms of work, in terms of the success of their children. And all around us, families are turning this notion of being dysfunctional and a black family on its head.
Yes, exactly. And so they're definitely doing that. And so I think that for the majority of people, they do see it as a positive family image for the mm-hmm. black family. And like you mentioned, of course, there are going to be people who are saying, well, they're the outliers because they're so highly educated, mm-hmm. right, that they may not be the typical black family. But I would also argue that we have the show Blackish on TV.
That's
right?
A great point,
and
yes.
And so that's a different, family image, mm-hmm. But still a very positive image of a successful, strong, I guess, if you will, black family. And even you also see the grandparents, make appearances in that, too, to show that extended family kinship, as well as Michelle Obama's mother, living in the White House with the Obamas.
Very true.
There, right, during the inauguration to support the girls, Sasha and Malia Obama.
And we might add also that there are successful black families that are single parent homes as well. So we don't want to lock in that and act as if a successful life is exclusive to a two-parent home, because all around us are examples of single-parent homes doing well and exceeding. I find this very enlightening, and so wish we could continue to have this conversation in the Village, because you've studied the black family, past, present, and future. And so maybe at some point we can talk about what these trends suggest for our families in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Would love for you to come back and talk with us.
Yes, that would be so excellent. Thank you for having me today.
And with a nod to our ancestors, I am going to call you my cousin. Not only because we share the last name, because I'm such a fan of your work. So thank you very much. Sociologist Veronica Newton joining us in the Village. And we will be right back to talk more about these prescription drugs that are just a fraction of what you may be paying right now. So stay with us right here in the Village. I'm Vicki Newton.
It's time to plan our vacation.
Okay, Mommy.
Okay.
This summer, we're going to play in our own backyard.
We're staying home? No way.
In our yard? Really?
No, we're going to play in Arkansas's backyard this summer. We're going to visit our state parks.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, count me in. I'll have less driving to do and more time to fish and golf, swim, relax.
Uh-huh. So come here. Gather around. We're going to plan our vacation together.
For real?
Awesome.
Here we go. ArkansasStateParks.com. Ta-da! There, we're at the Arkansas State Parks website.
Ooh, look, I want to go there.
I want to do that.
Me too.
Just look at all there is to do. You know, playing in our own backyard in our state parks this summer is a great idea. Less travel time and more time for fun.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
Making vacation memories.
I'd like to take 30 seconds to give pickup drivers a brief lesson in rollover physics. It has to do with a vehicle's static stability factor, which is defined as one half the truck width divided by the height of the center of gravity. The larger the factor, the more lateral acceleration required to cause the force of gravity to pass through a vehicle's pivot point. In layman's terms, pickups are twice as likely to roll over than cars. Unfortunately, we can't change the laws of physics, but we can change your odds of survival. Buckle up in your truck.
Sponsored by the Arkansas Highway Safety Office, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and this station.
I'll never forget.
Never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hey, Glenn.
Well, you can tell that Chip over there is getting ready for the old family vacation.
Yeah.
He's pulling out the boat, airing the tents, checking gear, getting everything packed.
Yeah, we're about to head out on our vacation, too.
But you're sitting here drinking tea, surveying your domain from that lawn chair.
Yeah, buddy.
So are you really about to leave on a vacation?
Yep, right here in Arkansas to enjoy our great state parks.
Why aren't you getting your gear together?
Because we rent it in the state parks. Instant vacation. No hassles before we go and none after we get back.
Rent?
Yep, the state parks have ski boats, party barges, fishing boats, kayaks, canoes. They even have RVs and tents already set up, plus the cabins and more.
RVs?
Just go to ArkansasStateParks.com. It's all there.
Instant vacation sounds like a perfect vacation.
Yeah, it will be if you mow my lawn while I'm gone.
Well, sure.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
Welcome back to the Village Celebration. When was the last time you went to the doctor? Well, conventional wisdom suggests that women are the ones who typically make the doctor's appointments for the kids, for themselves, and for the men in their lives. Village contributor Jim Scott, though, tells us about a trip to the barbershop that was almost like a visit to the doctor.
Vicki, I thought it nearly impossible for anyone or anything to impress me. After all, I'd done a lot in life, both planned and on the spare of the moment. Spent time in foreign lands, worked terrific jobs, and traveled extensively, both for work and pleasure. So imagine my shock when I walked into my local black-owned barbershop. Two white women were greeting the patrons. Well, at first glance, they looked like folks you might see in any food store or shopping mall. But it became apparent right away that they were here on a mission. And I'd learned that my barber was in on it. I'd also find that the fact that they were white was sheer coincidence. And why the barber invited them in deserves some special recognition. They were nurses. "Hi, may I take your blood pressure today?" one said calmly. I thought for a minute and said, "No, I'm on medication and I'm straight." Well, she pushed on, saying, "Sir, it'll only take a minute to see if the medication is working." My barber didn't say anything, but the look he gave me kind of scared me, so I said, "Oh, heck, why not?" Both women quickly took over, one of them pumping up the band on my upper arm while the other put two fingers on my wrist to get my heart rate. "Okay," the nurse said, "your blood pressure is 130 over 80. That's real good. So it's clear your medication is doing its job." The other woman told me my heart rate is good as well. I smiled and thanked them. Well, as they moved on to another brother just coming into the shop, his reaction was comical. You could see he didn't know what was going on and didn't give in right away until the barber spoke up, saying, "Man, I know you need things checked. When have you been to a doctor or had a physical?" The brother thought for a minute and said, "About 5 years ago when I got out of the military." Well, it's been said that persistence pays off because the brother's blood pressure was so high and his heart rate so troublesome that they told him he needed to go to an emergency room right now. One of them offered to call paramedics to get him there. They didn't discuss particulars in public because, by law, they could only talk with him. But everyone in the shop knew this was serious. The barbershop was silent, but just for a minute, suddenly, four other customers asked the nurses to check them out. The barber seemed relieved, but not only because a man was on his way to the hospital, but happy that the message got through. Black men in particular and black women need to be concerned about these things. Many a tough person who wasn't is under a headstone today, so I'm asking black businesses, churches, and other organizations to set up health screenings like the one my barber thought to do. He just contacted the local health care company and asked, and they said yes. It just might help save a life. By the way, the brother at the shop did get a ride to an emergency room, and while I don't know the outcome, I haven't seen him since, but he must have been okay because the barber would have let everyone know. I'm Jim Scott, and that's what I'm talking about.
Stay with us when we come back. We'll talk about those prescription drugs for a fraction of the cost. We're joined by Daryl Munden from RX Outreach, so stay with us.
That moment, we arrived on the scene.
The storm had nearly destroyed the area.
This was our own community. Friends, family, people we grew up with, went to school with, we were there to help.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
They made it down to the storm cellar, but the house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had chainsaws going, and we had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Right here, close to home, in my state.
It was one of those life-changing moments where I realized I am making a difference in these people's lives and mine. I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
You can serve part-time and be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Nice.
I hit it perfect.
You're just standing too close to the ball. After you hit it.
Hey, you had one in the rough, two in the trees.
We're keeping score?
Yeah.
Maybe a new course would lower your handicap. Mm. Arkansas State Parks has two golf courses.
Yeah?
We should play them.
Tell me more.
The Gray Lake Resort's golf course is perfect for us. 18 holes overlooking the lake, and the wives will enjoy DeGray's Island Lodge.
Sweet.
Yeah, then we'll play the ridges at Village Creek.
Village Creek State Park has a course?
Yeah, here it's outstanding. 27 holes, Andy Dye design,
wow.
PGA caliber championship layout, and dramatic elevation changes since it's on Crowley's Ridge.
Wow.
And the girls will enjoy the cabins.
How do we get on these courses?
Well, they're in our state park, so they're public courses.
Yeah.
ArkansasStateParks.com has details and photos.
Let's finish this round and book a tee time.
Oh, yeah.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
From the Ozark Mountains to Old Man River. Arkansas's 52 state parks belong to all of us to experience, to enjoy, to remember.
Our family stayed in the Mountain Lodge at Pettigene for the holiday, and no one had to cook. We ate in the lodge. Oh, the view over the canyon. Oh, and those huge fireplaces. Oh, the chocolate pies.
I remember going to the lodge on the Gray Lake.
The park naturalist took us out on a boat, but we'd never seen an eagle in the wild before, and we saw five that day.
The cabin at Devil's Den when it snowed. We went hiking. It was so beautiful. And then we found that journal in the cabin, and we sat by the fire and read stories that the other guests had written. I'll never forget that.
The State Parks of Arkansas. Call 1-888-AT-PARKS for a free guidebook or visit ArkansasStateParks.com. Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
You're listening to the Village Celebration Radio Show, and I'm Vicki Newton. So glad that you have joined us. We hear stories all the time about Americans, our neighbors, even family members who cannot afford their prescription medication. And for years, we've talked about the high costs of health care with the Affordable Care Act that President Obama passed. That is more of a possibility for many Americans who at one point could not afford insurance. Now let's talk about prescription medicine. We are joined by Daryl Munden, who is the president of RX Outreach. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us here in the Village.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to the beginning of RX Outreach and tell us how it is related, since one of our themes tonight is family, how it's related to Express Scripts and how you and Michael Holmes work together to bring RX Outreach to fruition.
Sure. So back in late 2009, Michael actually came up with this vision of taking a program that was previously a part of Express Scripts, a generic patient assistance program, and spinning it off as a separate nonprofit company. And it's amazing how quickly that plan went from just a white paper to actually execution.
Mm-hmm.
I met Michael on the 31st of December, and he communicated to me as he was coming out to tour the facility that this plan that he had and the vision that he had, and after submitting that to the powers to be at Express Scripts, they wholeheartedly supported it. And before you know it, we were well into, well, how do we actually make this work?
Right.
And splitting the organizations apart and becoming a separate independent nonprofit company, which took place in October of 2010.
It really did move quickly. What I like about the story is that it seems both you and Michael prayed about RX Outreach. Tell us about the role of faith in getting this from paper to promise.
I'm going to speak a little bit about Michael because he shared the story with me, but he, in his morning prayer time, it was something that God placed on his heart. And then when Michael, it's one thing to hear something and or you feel that you need to do something, but it's a whole nother thing to say, I'm going to step out on faith and do this.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what he did. And when he spoke to me about the opportunity of coming over and being a part of this, my first desire was to pray about it as well and make sure that this is what God really wanted me to do. And after praying about it, I did get this peace and this comfort about this is really what I'm supposed to do. And we both set out on the course of, well, let's make this happen and let's do it right.
You all have often run into a little bit of disbelief. The program is so good that sometimes patients say, okay, now what's the catch? If you can get a 180-day supply of your drugs for $20, I think it's kind of fair to say, okay, wait a minute, how many pills are in there? Five? So tell us about this effort to explain that, yes, this really is the real thing.
And you're absolutely correct, because it is one of those, it sounds too good to be true, but the thing about it is that it is true. And the way we do that is we, being a not-for-profit organization, the mission for us is purely to make medication affordable. Now, nothing wrong with for-profit organizations, but obviously they have shareholders to answer to, and therefore, if they have the opportunity, they're going to be able to charge. They're going to charge a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
That's not our motive, and you know, for many reasons, in the circumstances that we see people that are that they face in their daily lives and the quality of their lives, we understand the need and necessity as well to be able to get them the medication at a very affordable price. We are using the same manufacturers
mm-hmm.
that many others use. We're part of a group purchasing organization, so the others are buying from the same place as we're buying from, all FDA-approved medications. The only difference is the motive of us as an organization.
So how do you know if you qualify to participate in RX Outreach?
It's actually pretty straightforward. We go up to what's referred to as 300% of the federal poverty level. So for a single person, that means that they can make $35,000, almost $36,000, and qualify for the program.
Really?
To give you another a barometer, yeah, absolutely. A family of four can qualify if they make up to $72,000, almost $73,000. And what they're qualifying for is access to nearly 800 different drug strengths of medication for chronic conditions, typically generic medications. But here recently, we've had the privilege of being able to work with generic pharma manufacturers in starting up patient assistance programs for them, whereby even some of those medications are being paid for them, by them, so it's free to the patient.
This is amazing. Single, you can make up to $35,000, $36,000 and still qualify. Family of four, up to $72,000 and still qualify. This is really good news to share with the village. And you have a vested interest in making sure that your neighbors and loved ones and Americans, African Americans, can have the drugs they need. And it goes back to your grandmother who suffered from heart disease.
Yes, it does. And my grandmother and I, we were very close. And when I was around 15 years old, she came to live with us. And And my brother and sister, they both knew how our relationship was, and we still joke about it today. But Grandma had congestive heart failure,
mm-hmm.
and when she was growing, leaving her life, she also had 13 children, which, if you can imagine, would probably be a chore for anyone. But with that, the challenges of being able to provide food and clothing for them meant that something may not could not be taken care of, and that was partly the chronic conditions that she suffered from.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, she died in what I would say at a young age, in her mid 60s, mm-hmm. and that was an episode for me that really touched me, and in a manner so much that I wanted to do something even as I embarked on going off to college to say, is there something I can do to maybe even make a medication that treated her condition?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I didn't do that. But the path that I took over the next 34 years brought me to this organization, RX Outreach, where not only can I honor my grandmother, but I can help numerous other individuals all across the United States, because this program goes to all 50 states, Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, and it's helping people just like my grandmother, people struggling every day for trying to make different ends meet, be it mm-hmm. the utilities, the gas in the vehicle, the groceries, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
By helping in this particular area, we're able to help free up dollars that allow them to do things that are other necessities within their lives.
A lot of your drugs treat diseases and conditions that African Americans suffer at disproportionate rates, diabetes, high blood pressure. Tell us the impact that you're hoping RX Outreach will have in the African American community.
Well, it's quite simple. It's we want to see people be able to get the medications necessary to treat their condition so that they can improve the quality of their lives and the relationships that they have. The thing that was broken for me was the relationship with my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Was not fulfilled to the degree that it could have been. So what we're trying to do here is to improve and in some cases save lives in the African-American community by having them be able to access medications. And just to give you an idea, some of the medications you can get a 180-day supply for $20.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I had an experience where I went to a retail establishment with my daughter who had fallen out of the system with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And three prescriptions were over $410.
Oh, my gosh.
Three 30-day prescriptions. And I'm talking about medications that 30 are
30-day prescriptions. My goodness, that's exorbitant. 30-day prescriptions, and they were over $400? Not very many people can afford that.
That is correct. But that's what people are faced with. When they don't have insurance,
mm-hmm.
And they're paying out-of-pocket for those medications, that's the reality. And it's the decision of, well, can I get X number of pills, or I'm going to go without, which is what I did. I turned to my daughter and I said, so if I wasn't able to produce an insurance card or you were not able to be covered, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Dad, I just wouldn't be able to take it.
Exactly, and that happens to so many. Happens to a lot
Absolutely.
Of people. That's their reality. But with RX Outreach, they can get 180-day supply for $20 in some cases. And finally, as we wrap up, tell us about the prescription bottle, because I love this part of the RX Outreach story.
Sure. One of the core values, and this is what this organization was founded on, it's Christian values. And the bottle cap that we send out to on every vial that we send to patients says RX Outreach, honoring God by serving others. And that's what we do. We know the plight of the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come to us, what we want to make sure we do is we provide them exceptional service that they don't routinely get
mm-hmm.
throughout the course of their lives. But coming here, they know that we're going to be treating them to the best of our ability, fair, offering prices that make it easier for them to make the equation of life, if I could call it that,
mm-hmm.
more easy for them to accomplish. And you know, in the eyes of many, these people that we're serving are considered the least. But we flip that,
mm-hmm.
and we want to provide them premier and exceptional service.
Well, it is an outstanding example of servant leadership. We wish you continued success with RX Outreach. Daryl Munden, president of RX Outreach, thank you for joining us in the Village and telling us this great news. We hope that so many people have heard it that you guys have to work overtime.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we will be right back with our Village doctor, Dr. Diane Marshall, with some tips on preparing for surgery if that is in your future. And we will talk more about designing women and their prayer breakfast. You're listening to the Village Celebration. I'm Vicki Newton.
It took 30 seconds to give pickup drivers a brief lesson in rollover physics. It has to do with a vehicle's static stability factor, which is defined as one half the truck width divided by the height of the center of gravity. The larger the factor, the more lateral acceleration required to cause the force of gravity to pass through a vehicle's pivot point. In layman's terms, pickups are twice as likely to roll over than cars. Unfortunately, we can't change the laws of physics, but we can change your odds of survival. Buckle up in your truck.
Sponsored by the Arkansas Highway Safety Office, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Okay, you guys, it's time to plan our vacation.
Okay, Mommy.
Okay.
This summer, we're gonna play in our own backyard.
We're staying home? No way.
In our yard? Really?
No, we're gonna play in Arkansas's backyard this summer. We're gonna visit our state parks.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, count me in. I'll have less driving to do and more time to fish and golf.
just swim, relax.
Uh-huh. So come here. Gather around. We're going to plan our vacation together.
For real?
Awesome.
Here we go. ArkansasStateParks.com. Ta-da! There, we're the Arkansas State Parks website.
Ooh, look, I want to go there.
I want to do that.
Me too.
Just look at all there is to do. You know, playing in our own backyard in our state parks this summer is a great idea. Less travel time and more time for fun.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
Making vacation memories.
Hello. You may know me. I kill over 200 people each year in Arkansas. I could be driving any one of the next 10 cars you see on the road. I'm the drunk driver, and I'm headed your way.
If you're hit by a drunk driver, your best protection, as always, is your safety belt. And if you're the one driving drunk, please pull over, pass the keys, and save a life.
Sponsored by the Arkansas Highway Safety Office, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and this drunk driver who learned the hard way.
I'll never forget
that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard, aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
It's the Village Celebration you're listening to, and we are glad that you have joined us. Let's go to our Village Doctor, Dr. Diane Marshall. How are you, Dr. Di?
I'm wonderful, Vicki. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, quickly, I read a study today about happiness around the world. And do you know that 77% of the people around the world indicate they're happy? Most of them are in Latin America, but we Americans are a pretty happy bunch as well.
That's good news.
Isn't that good news? That's
wonderful.
Good for all of us. That's good for the heart, and
absolutely.
And it does a body good, never mind milk, right? You also found
That's
a study about preparing for surgery, and of course no one wants to undergo surgery, but there are some things that you can do to get yourself ready if that's the path that is ahead of you.
That's correct, Vicki. I don't know if most of the listeners recall, but several years ago in Florida, there was a surgery that occurred where the wrong leg was cut off on a patient.
I do remember.
And so my first thought is, you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, if a wrong leg was cut off, what did the right leg look like?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it must have been pretty bad.
Right.
But, you know, the point is that too many times we take it for granted that the providers of the service, the physicians, the nurses, are going to do the right thing by us. Now, we're going to try to do the very best that we can, but we must be our own best advocates.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're preparing for any type of procedure, be it in the office, be it with your dentist, be it a surgical procedure, you need to make sure that we are addressing the correct need. And I'll tell you where I got it from.
Mm-hmm.
Physicians Weekly reported that an infant had an unnecessary surgery.
Oh, my gosh.
The baby, the line under your tongue called the frenulum,
mm-hmm.
Was cut on a baby.
Ouch.
Accidentally, because they thought the baby's frenulum was too short, which means that occasionally when kids get older and they start to talk, they may, have you heard of tied tongue? Their tongues
uh-huh,
may be tied.
Sure.
Well, either way, the wrong baby was in the procedure. The baby couldn't speak for himself. The mother let them take the baby in because she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so his frenulum was cut. Now, you might say, well, that's not a big deal, but it is a big
sure.
deal in an infant who cannot speak for
mm-hmm.
themselves. So when you go into a procedure or your child goes into a procedure, number one, make sure that you have the right patient, okay?
Absolutely.
Right patient, right procedure. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you must agree that this is the procedure. Example, you come into my office, I say, let's inject your knee because you have arthritis. Is it your right knee or your left knee? Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes patients are in pain enough that they're holding their eyes or closing and covering their eyes with their hands. They're not paying attention.
Okay.
I inject the wrong knee. Mm-hmm. So you want to always ask the patient which knee, make sure that they clarify which knee, make sure that you indicate which knee, and you use whatever procedure your office is used to identify the correct knee.
And the patient also may want to take someone mm-hmm. in with them in case they are in a lot of pain. What do you think? Someone can speak for them or make sure they focus on what the physician is saying.
I think that's a good idea. If they're in a lot of pain, have someone else with you who can, you're right, help focus. No, it's this leg. This is mm-hmm. the one he's complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the right procedure. And then before the procedure occurs, we as physicians must ask that you sign a consent. And so don't just sign that consent. Look and make sure, because we have to tell you what we're doing.
Okay.
So when we write out what we're doing on the consent, make sure it says the right part. What part am I operating on today? Make sure it's correct.
Okay.
And then the third part of that is make sure the person who's doing the procedure has the appropriate equipment. What if, now I know a lot of times patients aren't going to know what all the appropriate equipment is, but you know, just make sure that they've got everything they need in case something happens. We've got gauzes. We've got something happens if you're in an operating room where they can do CPR. That kind of stuff needs to be thought about. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of look around and analyze the room, analyze the situation, and make sure you ask appropriate questions because it can happen. And the worst part about that is that it would be sad if it happened to you.
Oh my
or
gosh.
Or your child.
Or your child.
So,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So parents, as always, have to be the best advocate. They are often the best advocate for a child, especially in a medical situation.
That's correct.
Those are
and
some
a lot
great
of times
tips.
We have so many patients we're trying to move through. You know, we want to make sure that we're just doing the right thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
don't just call out, you know, patient number, whatever. Make sure,
sure
you're addressing that patient by name and that you're doing the right, you know, the right thing.
And it's
to do
good
due diligence.
To trust your physician, but it's also good to take an active role in your health care, particularly
yes,
the day
is.
Of a surgery. As much as you can.
Yes,
please. Dr. Diane
Got it
Marshall
right, Vicky.
Joining us in the Village. Thank you, Dr. Di. We'll talk with you next week.
Oh, certainly. And Vicky, don't forget about our Village Doctor of the Day.
I know. We have our Village Doctor coming up. When we return, we are going to talk about a prayer breakfast. So, Dr. Di, stick around. Can you give us a hint about this doctor? And let's see how many in the Village may already know who she is.
The first African-American female physician in the United States.
Oh, that's a very good one. We'll tell you after this break and the women who are having a prayer breakfast, calling themselves Designing Women in the Village.
Boat is a piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Hmm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park lot. Enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
I'll never forget.
Never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Time.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
My daughter made me this cute bottle with a little water in it. Until I can quit smoking, I can stop flicking cigarette butts and put them in here when I drive. They're litter, plain and simple. This is my way to help keep Arkansas beautiful. My daughter made me this cute bottle with a little water in it. Until I can quit smoking, I can stop flicking cigarette butts and put them in here when I drive. They're litter, plain and simple. This is my way to help keep Arkansas beautiful.
For every ton of paper we recycle, we save 17 trees. I really like trees. Recycling helps keep Arkansas beautiful. A message from the station.
The Arkansas Broadcasters Association
and Keep Arkansas Beautiful.
Listening to the Village Celebration. Welcome back. 11 years of service in a community. We are joined now by the designing women, Cynthia Austin and Angela Armstrong, joining me to tell us about an event you all have coming up. First of all, you can dust off your bling for one event and then put on your nice dress for another event. So right. To fill everyone in on with the details.
Yes, April the 1st and 2nd, we having our 11th year anniversary. On that Friday night, we having our black tie and bling black carpet, where we'll be honoring our honorees and giving away high school scholarships to a deserving senior. And on that Saturday morning, we having our annual prayer breakfast. And my son, all the way from Lancaster, California, the Bishop Avery Austin Sr., will be our speaker.
That sounds really exciting. Yes. So if you can't make one, you can do the evening or you can do the breakfast, or if you're really fortunate, you can do both.
Yes, and you know, we have an registration is $45 for
both. Is that for both events?
Both events. $45.
Really? Yes. Oh, that's outstanding. Yes. So Ms. Armstrong, fill us in on the prayer breakfast.
Okay. So the prayer breakfast begins at 8:00 a.m. that morning at the Little Rock Marriott. And we are asking everyone to try to be there a little early because it does get crowded. We're expecting over 450 people that
really?
Morning. Yes.
This is the 11th annual, so you've done
yes.
this 11 years running.
Yes.
Have you done both events 11 years, or you recently added one?
We just added this black tie and bling.
And black carpet this year?
Yes, this
year. Oh, my
year.
Gosh. Okay, so what are you wearing? I'm sorry. Let's just digress for a minute.
Oh, of course, it's a formal event.
Can you tell what you're wearing?
Formal wear, uh-huh. without bling. We're going to be shining everywhere.
Shining,
we
sparkle.
Carpet and
sparkle like
yes.
a diamond. What is it, shine like a diamond?
Yes.
This year we will also have a backdrop where you can take pictures. We also have some of our honorees who will be dropped off in limousines. So
oh,
it's going to be really nice this
Dialing
year.
Dialing up the glitz. I love this backdrop. It's not the bamboo chair that we all remember way back, right?
No, not at all.
It's a little more upscale than the bamboo chair. Okay, I know. I kind of let a little of my past slip out there. So tell us the date again.
April the 1st and 2nd at okay. the Little Rock Marriott Hotel.
And Designing Women is a faith-based organization. You all are about saving souls.
Yes, yes.
And community at the same time.
Yes, our mission statement is to build, to strengthen, to motivate, to encourage people of all calibers of life. And it really started from my hair salon. I've been a salon owner for like 25 years. And so on a daily basis, you know, we inspire women. Mm-hmm. We, you know, do their hair to uplift them, all of that. And so that's where my ministry started, right there in my salon.
Because, you know, when you sit in that chair, when you go to the salon, it turns into a rap session, a therapy
yes.
session, a counseling session, a little bit of church. You
yes.
can get all of that in the salon. So you use that as your springboard.
Yes.
And over the years, you've added other women to your team.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Cynthia Austin, Angela Armstrong, April 1st and 2nd. Get out your long gowns.
Yes.
Get a limousine if you're not one of the honorees and you want one. And remember, there's a backdrop, no bamboo chair.
That's right.
Okay? April 1st and 2nd.
Yes.
We're back in 1 minute in the village to answer the question, who was the first African-American female doctor? We'll be right back.
No, I can't believe that.
Nice.
I hit it perfect.
You're just standing too close to the ball. After you hit it.
Hey, you had one in the rough, two in the trees.
We're keeping score?
Yeah.
Maybe a new course would lower your handicap. Mm. Arkansas State Parks has two golf courses.
Yeah?
We should play them.
Tell me more.
The Gray Lake Resort's golf course is perfect for us. 18 holes overlooking the lake, and the wives will enjoy DeGray's Island Lodge.
Sweet.
Yeah, then we'll play the ridges at Village Creek.
Village Creek State Park has a course?
Yeah, here it's outstanding. 27 holes, Andy Dye design,
wow.
PGA caliber championship layout, and dramatic elevation changes since it's on Crowley's Ridge.
Wow.
And the girls will enjoy the cabins.
How do we get on these courses?
Well, they're in our state park, so they're public courses.
Yeah.
ArkansasStateParks.com has details and photos.
Let's finish this round and book a tee time.
Oh, yeah.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
You know, Maya, you're really good in the sciences, and you're good with people also. Have you ever considered being a doctor?
Maybe just a little bit. My aunt was a surgeon.
Ah, surgery is an option. But did you know that family doctors are going to be leading healthcare in the future?
Arkansas needs family doctors. Family doctors see a variety of patients and conditions, focusing on prevention that saves lives. Family medicine, leading the healthcare team.
A message from this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and UAMS.
We are wrapping up our episode of the Village Celebration Radio Show, but we have to answer this question. It's Women's History Month, and so here's the question. Dr. Dye, you're back with us. The question is, who was the first African-American female doctor? Drum roll, please.
And it was Rebecca Davis Lee Crumpler. She was an internal medicine physician, and she practiced between 1864 and 1883.
1864 and 1883? That was even before the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, just maybe a year or so before then, she must have been incredible.
Incredible. She was fortunate enough to be born in Delaware.
Okay, so she was a free state.
The, New England Female College, Female Medical College, and successfully got her doctorate of medicine degree.
Wow, we salute Rebecca Crumpler, Dr. Rebecca Crumpler, here in the Village Celebration. That is an amazing piece of history. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Absolutely, Vicki.
Dr. Diane Marshall, we are out of time, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show. Go to thevillagecelebration.com, thevillagecelebration.com. We have redesigned the website. A lot of great stories. You can read our article with sociologist Veronica Newton talking about the Black family, reviewing its roots. And we hope to see you next week here in the Village. I'm Vicki Newton. Thank you so much for joining us.
Let me tell you a story about a village that is built with his glory. No sorrow in this place, just lift your voice and say.